Psalm 90, and this is a prayer of Moses, the man of God. And let's read it through once and then study it together. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn man to destruction and say, "Return, O children of men." For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it's past, and like a watch in the night. You carry them away like a flood. They are like a sleep. In the morning they are like grass which grows up. In the morning it flourishes and grows up. In the evening it is cut down and withers. We've been consumed by your anger and by your wrath. We're terrified. You've set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. For all our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh. The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they're 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow. For it is soon cut off. We fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, so is your wrath. So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long? And have compassion on your servants. O satisfy us early with your mercy, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad according to the days in which you have afflicted us, the years in which we have seen evil. Let your work appear to your servants, and your glory to their children. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Some of you may have read J.R.R. Tolkien's book, The Hobbit. And in that book, The Hobbit, there's an interesting scene where the hero, Bilbo Baggins, meets up with the evil creature Gollum. And Gollum wants to eat Bilbo, and Bilbo obviously just wants to get away. And so they challenge each other to a game of riddles. And whoever can guess the other one's riddle wins that round. Until eventually one asks the other one a riddle and they can't answer, in which case they lose. So at one point, Gollum asks Bilbo this riddle. He has to guess what this is. He says, "This thing all things devours, birds, beasts, trees, flowers, gnaws iron, bites steel, grinds hard stones to meal, slays kings, ruins town, and beats high mountain down." Bilbo thinks and thinks, and Gollum eggs him on, "You're about to be eaten," till finally Bilbo says, "Time. Time. Time devours all things, birds, beasts, trees, flowers. Time gnaws iron and bites steel. Time grinds stones down to meal. Time slays kings. Time ruins towns and beats high mountains down." Of course, Gollum's furious, but that's the answer. Time. Time. Science, our modern science, is desperately trying to conquer time. I told you that I watched this documentary this week where a fellow named Aubrey de Grey is a gerontologist. He works entirely on old age. And his theory is that if we just keep replacing our body parts, we can be essentially like vintage cars. We can just keep on renovating and we could theoretically live forever. He says the people who will live to 1,000 have already been born. Science is trying to conquer the genetic code. We already understand some of the things of what causes aging, and the thinking amongst these scientists is if we can genetically engineer ourselves, we could live forever. And if we can live forever, we can really fulfill the serpent's promise in the garden. We can live forever and be as gods, knowing good and evil. We can be autonomous, do what we want, build our own Tower of Babels with no consequences. No time limits. Time won't threaten us any longer. You see, the truth is, without God, time is your enemy. Time will defeat your body. Time will defeat your fame and popularity. Time will defeat your achievements. It will defeat everything you do in this world to make your mark and be significant and get to the top and be the exception. You will not be the exception to what time does. We sang Isaac Watts' words, "Time, like an ever-rolling stream, bears all its sons away. They fly," oh, we don't like this, "they fly forgotten as a dream dies at the opening day." Time. But there's one solution to what time does. And it was written by a man who lived 120 years. Moses. Moses understood this whole concept of time. You see, Moses had lived a life where he knew the pain of what seemed like wasted years. You can really think of Moses' life in three sets of 40. His first 40 years he spends as a prince in Egypt, learning the ways of being a ruler of men, being culturally educated, being royalty. And at the end of those 40 years, what happens? He sees somebody trying to beat up an Israelite, and he tries to deliver Israel by his own hand, by the flesh, murders the man, becomes an outlaw, has to flee. And for the next 40 years of his life, he's a shepherd in Midian. And you've got to think to yourself, for someone who is a prince in Egypt to now be a sheep herder, he must think to himself, what was the point of those 40 years? What's the point of these next 40 years? My life has just slipped away and it hasn't made any sense. And then God calls him at the burning bush to lead Israel out. And he does so. And what happens? Israel rebels within 2 years and they spend another 40 years wandering around the wilderness. And for the last 40 years of his life, Moses watches people die off. Everyone over the age of 20. Die, die, die. Here's a man who at the end of his life saw and knew what it was to feel as if your years had no purpose and have just been wasted. He saw how time can be your enemy. But he also saw how time could be your friend. He saw how time can ravage and destroy one life and present amazing opportunity and blessing in another. Wouldn't you like this guy to write something to us? Well, he did. He wrote us a song. He wrote us a poem. Psalm 90. Now I'm a little bit odd. I tend to like some sad music. I don't have anyone like that is here. You know, I don't like sad music. Make it happy all the time. I tend to like some songs that are written in the minor key. Some sad music, beautiful sad music. Barber's Adagio for strings and songs that just kind of have a slightly mournful tune. And this does. It has a sad tone, but not a despairing tone. There's hope in the sadness. And this poem in front of you, Psalm 90, may well be one of the oldest poems on earth. It's older than all the Davidic Psalms, it's older than Solomon's, it's older than Asaph's. 3,500 years old, this poem is. And it's there to teach you and I about time, eternity, human frailty, and what we need to do. And Moses is going to give us the hard, sad facts about human frailty. He's not going to pull his punches. And if you stop reading halfway through the psalm, you're going to be reeling and depressed. So I advise you to listen to the end of the message, okay? So he's going to remind us of those hard, sad facts of our frailty. And then he's going to remind us of the soaring, high truths of God's eternity. And then, for those who have ears to hear, he's going to tell us of the necessity of grace. He's going to point us to what we need to do in light of the passing of time. So let's begin with the frailty of man. Verse 3 of Psalm 90. Psalm 90. Let's read this together. He says, "You turn man to destruction and say, 'Return, O children of men. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it's past and like a watch in the night. You carry them away like a flood. They're like a sleep. In the morning they're like grass which grows up, in the morning it flourishes and grows up, in the evening it's cut down and withers. For we've been consumed by your anger and by your wrath, we are terrified. You've set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. For all our days have passed away in your wrath, we finish our years like a sigh. The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they are 80, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow. It's soon cut off and we fly away.'" Wow. Moses compares man to God, and he says, God, who called us out of dust, can just return us there. And our lifetimes to God are like the blink of an eye. 1,000 years may well as be yesterday to God. You know? Yesterday was Saturday. What did you do yesterday? Oh, I did a few things. That's 1,000 years for God. People by the droves are swept away by the hand of God's time. In the grand scheme, you and I are like a forgotten dream. How many of you remember your dreams last night? You know? So yeah, some weird people do. So, you know. Most of us, you know, what do you dream of? You know, you remember it for 5 seconds and it slips out of your mind. Very humbling to imagine that me, my existence, me, that I could be like a forgotten dream. Our lifespans are like the briefest life. And the images that Moses gives us here are all images of things that pass quickly, right? He says yesterday. He says a dream. He says a watch in the night. He speaks of a flood, you know, that flashing water that comes through. And then comes the saddest image in verse 5 and 6. You can look what he says at the end of verse 5. In the morning, they're like grass which grows up. In the morning, it flourishes and grows up. In the evening, it is cut down and withers. Wow. We're like grass that sprouts in the morning, that fresh dew, that green life. And the midday sun comes and saps the liquid out. And by the end of the day, it's brown and dry. And it's just raked away. You and my life, it is compared here to the briefest lifespans on earth. He tells us in verse 10 that our lifespans are, apparently in Moses' time it was very similar to ours, our lifespans average 70 years. And he says, if by some reason we reach 80, those extra 10 years are years of struggle and years of pain and exhaustion. We're soon cut off. What is he trying to tell us? Our lives are quick and frail. Time defeats every human life. If you live for the here and now only, the story of your life will properly speaking, be a tragedy. See, a tragedy is a story with a sad ending. And Psalm 90, as I said, is really a song, an encapsulation of the whole book of Ecclesiastes. Raise your hand if you've read the book of Ecclesiastes at some point, right? Ecclesiastes is a book you need to read at some point. You just, you know, set aside just 2 hours and read right through it. And the whole theme of the book of Ecclesiastes is really about how time wins and has the last laugh. If you live, or as Solomon puts it, life under the sun, then not only will time beat you, it will mock you. And Solomon shows us in painful, depressing detail what happens with every pursuit with time. So for example, Solomon shows us you want pleasure. You seek pleasure through food, through sexuality, through music, through entertainment. In the end, as we read, as Jonathan read for us, what happens to your body? You can't hear anymore, you can't taste anymore, you can't see anymore, you can't feel anymore, you're weak, you're afraid. Your body gives in and pleasure, bodily pleasure, is not possible. Time wins. You pursue achievement, Solomon tells us, and success. And however successful you are, at some point, you've got to leave it to someone else. And time catches up, and that business you built, that church you helped to grow, that idea you came up with and developed, that family you strengthened, at some point, it goes to someone else. And Solomon says, what happens if it goes to a fool? He takes it in another direction, he ruins it, he changes it. Time wins. You pursue knowledge and instruction. You fill your mind with truth, you fill your shelves with books, you fill your walls with degrees. And you become learned, but time catches up and you die. And your books are forgotten and your teachings are forgotten. And your grave is exactly the same dimensions as the fool who boasted in how empty his head was. Solomon tells us that. He says, time wins. He says, you pursue wealth, and with great sacrifice and toil over the years, you build up your wealth, and God blesses you. But time catches up. And in the end, he says, the amount of money in your hand that you had when you came out the womb is the amount you can take with you into the tomb. No matter how swift, how strong, how just, how wise, Solomon says time and chance happens to all. Death is the great leveler. You see, the enemy of human achievement is time. No matter what we do or achieve, time defeats us. I'll say it again, apart from God, time is your enemy. You see, the young woman worries that time will march on and it will defeat her natural beauty without her finding marriage and family. And I've seen so many times many a Christian young lady who sacrifices her purity or settles for a marriage with little to no spiritual unity because she fears time. Time. The young man who worries that he won't really make his mark in the world, that he's just going to be one of the crowd. So he fights to make his mark and show his significance. But time defeats him. And he finds out with growing disillusionment that he won't change the world. The middle-aged man or woman fights time with other things, you know. Some get plastic surgery or some buy a Ferrari and some climb a mountain and they say, you see, time is not making a dent on me. I'm actually better than I was before. But time marches on. And those loud boasts and those flamboyant acts become more muted as time keeps doing its work. And the one going into the later years decides, you know, I'll beat time with a legacy. Maybe I won't be able to beat time with my body, but I'll beat it by leaving my mark in the world. So he tries to leave his mark through a book that he writes, or through his successful children or grandchildren, or through his business. But in his honest moments, he knows, under the sun, without God, that's going to be like footprints right next to the incoming shore. See, our culture lives in denial of this, doesn't it? It pretends it's not true. It denies what Psalm 90 says. Now and then the truth pokes through. You know, here's an experience you might sometime have. You'll be in a doctor's waiting room or something, and you'll pick up a magazine. And on the cover, there's the model. And she's posing with the flawless, shiny hair, the alluring lips, the eyes. And she says, "Be like me. Open this magazine. Be beautiful. Be seductive. Be the envy of women and the desire of men." And you know, you look at that. And then your eye goes to the top right corner and you notice the date. And the magazine is August 1988. Now think about it. And then you think to yourself, if you want to, and you should think this way, you go, August 1988, this model on the front cover was probably 23 or 24 when that was taken. It's 26 years since 1988. How old is she now? She's 48, 49. What does she look like now? Where is she now? Will she still be invited to pose on that glamour magazine? No, she wouldn't, because she'll advertise the truth about time. So you know what they do? They pay her and they dispose of her. And some current 23 or 24-year-old takes the place. Was she a real human being? Did she have real desires, hopes, dreams? Did she have real fears? Was she made in God's image? Was she a being who will live forever, either in heaven or hell? When her body loses all health and beauty, is she still precious to God? You see, it's the big lie of our culture, ever putting before us images of youth, ever putting before us images of perfection, pretending time has no effects. Listen, men, it's the lie of pornography, putting before people youthful bodies, a fantasy of timeless youth and valueless sex. It's the lie of the soap operas, the music videos, the billboards, the movies. They say, we do not fade. We do not fade. Come, live vicariously through these people. You are them. Imagine yourself like them. I've been to a website called whateverhappenstoo.net. And the whole website is a website about whatever happened to certain music pop stars and sports stars and all these people who are at the top of their game. And it's really sobering. You know, if you were a kid like me, you grew up in the 80s and 90s, there's certain names that you kind of remember. And you think, whatever happened to Rick Astley? And you see him now everywhere, not on YouTube, by the way. But you know, whatever happened to this guy? And you click on it. Ah, he's living somewhere, he's, you know, farming mushrooms. You know. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with farming mushrooms, frankly. I think that'd be kind of fun. But you know, one of my heroes, because I love athletics, one of my heroes was Carl Lewis, the sprinter. Where's he now? I think he's 52. He does, I don't know, motivational talks here and there. You see, where are they now? What do they look like now? What can they do now? Time has reduced them from heroes to forgotten curiosities that the world, with hypocrisy, laughs at. The world said, look at them, worship them. Now it goes, hey, look at them. See, man is frail. There's no escape from time and its effects. Moses saw this with great clarity. Because, you know, in that last 40 years of his life, God had sworn that no Israelite over the age of 20, when they were about to enter, you remember what happened, the 12 spies went in, the 10 said, I will never conquer it. And all the people over the age of 20, they said, you know, oh, little ones are going to perish. So God said, okay, here's the judgment. You will perish and your little ones won't. Everyone under 20 will grow up in the next 40 years. They'll go into the land. Everyone over 20 will die off as we walk in circles in the wilderness. And if you do a little mental calculation, it works out like this. 2 million Israelites. And if you say two-thirds of them, those 20 and over, you're talking about around about 1.3 million people who are going to die over 40 years. So you know, you do the maths. You say 40 years times 365, you get a certain number of days. You know how many people will die on average a day? 90 funerals a day. 90 funerals a day for 40 years. Imagine it. Wherever Israel went, they didn't leave pebbles, they left tombstones. And that's why Moses knows this. And he says this in verse 7. Look what he says. We've been consumed by your anger. By your wrath we're terrified. You've set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. All our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh. Life under God's judgment, life under God's discipline is sad. It's exhausting. Verse 11, he says, who knows the power of your anger? As the fear of you, so is your wrath. God didn't originally make us like this. You know, I always say to people at funerals, this feels unnatural, doesn't it? Death is an intruder. It doesn't feel right. We weren't made for mortality. We were made for eternity. God's put eternity in our hearts. And it's because of our sin. It's because of Adam's sin and our sin that continually says we want to live autonomously. We don't want our Creator. So death is the wages of sin. To live in God's world as if it's our world. And God's judgment of physical death for sin catches up with every human life. Life without a personal relationship with God is a life with judgment. I say it again, apart from God, time is your enemy. Moses, though, doesn't only remind us of our frailty. He wants to remind us of the one before whom we live out our frail lives. Look at verse 2 as he tells us of the eternity of God. He says, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn man to destruction and say, return, O children of men, for 1,000 years in your sight. Oh, like yesterday when it's past, and like a watch in the night. In comparison to God, man is nothing. See, God was present before the beginning. God was present before the most ancient things on earth had their fiery beginning. Have you ever climbed a mountain and looked at the rock and just for a moment asked yourself, how long has this been here? And then it hits you, since God spoke it into existence. And God was there before then. If you go back before the moment of creation, let there be light. God was not a young God at that time. Before that first angels woke up and saw their Creator's face, God was ancient and ageless. Moses tells us in verse 4 that the ages don't age God. 1,000 years is an enormous period of time to us. Think about it. What was happening in the year 1014? In the year 1014, what was going on? Have a few things happened since then? What can you even begin to imagine the world if the Lord tarries in the year 3014? 1,000 years, it's huge to us. For God, it's yesterday. It's a watch in the night, a few hours. Friends, Moses wants you and I to know it is this God who watches us as we work, as we gather, as we play, as we learn, as we grow. It's kind of an ironic thing. The ageless God watches us age. He watches us in our infancy, our childhood, our youth, our middle years, our old age. The Ancient of Days sees us the way we watch wilting blades of grass. In fact, it's the fact that He's in control of the whole process. He gives life, He takes it back. He can consume us in judgment, He can chasten us in anger. And so what should we do? We frail ones in front of this eternal one? Well, let me tell you some of the wrong responses that you can make in light of the fact that you are frail and He's eternal. One wrong response was current in the old Greek world. It was called Epicureanism. And that's just a fancy word for just living it up. Its motto was, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Yes, we acknowledge we're aging and dying, so instead of seeking meaning and importance and permanence in what we're doing, let's just party and pleasure ourselves before the time is up. You know, you only go around once, so get as much gusto as you can get. Or as the phrase which was put in James Dean's mouth, it wasn't actually original with him, maybe he did say, live fast, die young, and leave a good-looking corpse. Epicureans. The other wrong response is to lean totally on the scientific fight against aging. That thinking that says, you know what, our body is just a machine. We'll learn how to replace the parts. We'll learn how to fix things. And eventually, we'll learn how to live forever. So by the way, there's nothing wrong with fighting aging, okay? You're not sinning if you put wrinkle cream on your forehead, you know. You know, it's not a sin to want to eat well and be healthy, okay? It's not wrong to take medicine. It's not wrong to do those things. God does not expect us to take death as some inevitability that we welcome. But the point is, this thinking that, you know what, I don't have to accept it as inevitable. I will conquer it. I'll get past it. I'll live forever. God won't allow that. Do you know this ticking clock in your body is actually one of God's restraints on evil in the world? Can you imagine immortal sinners? Wow. Another response, wrong response, is to become bitter at God. You can rage at Him for your mortality and tell Him this is a sick joke in response to all the loved ones you've seen die and the sense of your own failing strength. And you will shake your fist in His face and say, that's how it's going to be. I won't serve You. I won't seek You. And you know, when you're done with any or all of these responses, how will it have affected the ancient, ageless God? He will watch your choices as your body weakens, and He will remain unaffected. And you will succumb to frailty, and He will be as youthfully powerful as He was when the first angels opened their eyes to look upon Him. And you will be condemning yourself to live under judgment. Don't do that. There's a better response, a right response. And Moses gives us the right response in verses 12 to 17. If you know the frailty of man and you acknowledge the eternity of God, then you should see the necessity of grace. Look at this good, precious, right response. Verse 12. So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Return, O Lord, how long, and have compassion on Your servants, so satisfy us early with Your mercy, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad according to the days in which you've afflicted us, the years in which we've seen evil. Let your work appear to your servants and your glory to their children. The necessity of grace. Yeah, there's frailty, there's God's eternity, but here there's the necessity of grace. Moses does the right thing. He prays. He doesn't curse the curse. He doesn't rage against what God does. He doesn't try to escape. He doesn't try to distract himself. He turns to the only one who can make sense of our swift lives, God. He turns to God, and notice he's looking at God not just as a God who judges, but as a gracious, good, loving God. And he asks for grace in three ways that dramatically change our experience of time and growing older. I pray you'll take them. Firstly, he asks for God to give us the right perspective on our lives. Perspective. Verse 12, he says, "So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." Perspective. God, would you please let us know and remind us that we will last forever, but we will not live forever. We are everlasting beings, and we will live forever in heaven or hell, and what we do now will affect that forever, but we will not live here forever. Our time in these aging bodies is a temporary assignment. It is a stewardship, a test, a trial, and it's going to affect forever. And so fill us with a sense of the limited nature of our days, of the unpredictability of one day over another. Help us to remember we're finite. Help us to remember that time is a limited resource. You know, the young person, the really young person, makes fun of time. You know, it doesn't seem to affect him or her. I mean, no matter what he does to his body, it just doesn't seem to age. So he looks at those older folks going to gym, and those people walking, and he mocks them. Ha ha! Look at what time did to him, he thinks. And she scoffs at these old folks who keep worrying about gray hairs and wrinkles. Time affects other people. It only helps me. You know, we were talking about this with our kids last night. And I said to them, you know, you think the problem with time is that it takes too long, isn't it? They said, yeah, that is the problem, you know. Yeah. You know, when you're waiting to turn 8, 7 takes so long, you know. Time affects other people. Time is my friend. And there's this feeling, you know, up to a certain age, that you're just kind of immortal. Time just makes you stronger, it makes you more beautiful. Time seems to work negatively for other people. And you kind of laugh at them. They just haven't figured this thing out. But if you think that way, young person, you're one of many who thought that way. And it's you who will not laugh at the end, because time always has the last laugh. And Moses says, please be gracious to us. Please give us perspective. Please help us to know that every day is one more day, but it's also one less day. How do you know that? How do you live, friends, if you recognize your life is like that sand in that egg timer, and perhaps there's more running down than there is up? See, if you start to think that way, as Moses says, you apply your heart to wisdom. You don't pursue what is foolish and weightless and useless. You ask the right questions. One of my favorite verses, and one that I often use at funerals, is Ecclesiastes 7 verse 2. And it says this, "Better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to heart." Funerals are better than parties. I've been privileged to be at a number of bedsides as that heaving chest went down for the last time. I watched my own father die in front of me. I've been privileged to do enough funerals to continually remind me this is the end of all men, including you, David. So what's it all about? What are you really living for? Death has the effect of having all people reflect on what matters most. Numbering our days has the same effect. It's a mercy. It's a grace. And you see, if you turn this around and look at it from the other perspective, the same God who is eternal, who just as it were watches us wither away. He of all people knows how tragic our lives are. He with His eternity looks at our tiny split-second lives, and in mercy and in grace, He knows and wants to redeem that. He knows how swift our lives are, and He in His love and His goodness is ready to redeem us and love us and add significance and eternal value to our lives, though they be to Him like a watch in the night. What would you invest in an ant? What would you invest in a flea? Ah, but God, with His image in you, His image in you, He loves you. And He would have you number your days and apply your heart to wisdom and consider that your life, you will not live forever, but you will last forever. Moses asks for a second grace. Look at verse 13. This is beautiful. Return, O Lord, how long, have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us early with your mercy that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad according to the days in which you've afflicted us, the years in which we've seen evil. Moses says, God, don't only give us perspective, but please give us your presence. Your presence. What does that mean? He's asking for compassion and mercy, as you see in your text here. And he's saying, please, God, come to us. And of course, now, 3,500 years on, we know that this finds its consummation in salvation in Jesus Christ. He, the Son of God, needs to come, forgive our sins, cleanse us, give us new lives, into our lives, and satisfy us. We need Him to bring joy into our lives, for as much time as we spent it in rebellion and darkness. And you know, after you're born again, if you trust Christ this day to be your Savior, you begin a lifelong process of living in God's presence, of learning of Him, of becoming like Him. And you know what God does? And you can report this, believer, if you've done this. He begins to kind of turn back the clock, doesn't He? And He begins to restore, as Joel says, Joel 2 verse 25, so I will restore you the years that the locust has eaten. Those years of vanity and emptiness and wastedness, those years of where you just felt it was vanity of vanities, lighter than air, weightless, meaningless, frustration. When God comes into your life, He begins to restore that. He begins to make sense of your life. He turns back the clock. He buys back your usefulness. Life lived with God and in God transforms the moments. Without God, as Solomon said, life is vanity of vanities. But with God, it's weighty. Do you remember that psalm? David says this. Beautiful. For a day in your courts is better than a thousand. What does he mean? A day spent in God's presence is worth a thousand spent in vanity. So here's your scale. 1,000 days, 3 years on the one side, spent without God, useless, pursuing your own things, 1 day in God's presence. Weightier, more fulfilling, more abundant. And notice how Moses begins the psalm, verse 1. You see, don't miss this. Lord, You have been our dwelling place in all generations. We want to live with You and in You, the Eternal One. You are our time capsule. You know time capsules, they take some arbitrary things from a certain century and they put it in and they seal it up, and 100 years later they're supposed to open it and you kind of see what life was like for those people in that time. You get in God and He's your time capsule. It's as if your life is almost suspended. Time passes slower in God. And in Him, the moments are fruitful. The work is satisfying. Life is meaningful. Aging in Christ takes on a whole new significance. You know, that's why that verse says, the silver head is a crown of glory when it be found in the way of righteousness. See, I'm working my way there. King David. Crown. In God. And that's why Paul, who understood this truth, got a whole new dimension on time and on living. He says, for to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And he says to these Philippians, you know, if I live on in the flesh, That will mean fruit for my labor. I'm going to do meaningful things. And yet what I shall choose, I cannot tell. I'm hard pressed between the two. I have a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. But nevertheless, to remain in the flesh, to be here in the body, is more needful for you. And you know what Paul's doing? He's choosing between goods and not between evils. That's life in God. Moses says, please give us perspective. Please give us your presence. And then he asks for one more thing. Look at verse 17. And let the beauty of our Lord, our God, be upon us and establish the work of our hands. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Moses says, please God, not just perspective and not just your presence. And this is precious to you, saint, but grant our work permanence. Permanence. Lord, in light of how things decay, in light of how we're here just for a season and then we're gone, be merciful to us. Establish the work of our hands. The Hebrew word here for establish has the idea of setting up something firmly. It has the idea of securing, of making something lasting and enduring. Moses is saying, God, will you please give permanence to our works? Isn't part of the pain of life that deep sense that what you do just seems to wash away and be forgotten? And I'm sure in your quietest moments you've asked yourself, did I really make a difference? Does it make a difference that I lived? And one of God's mercies and graces is that He will grant to your and my life, to our efforts, permanence. With God's blessing, what we do will outlast us. What we do will have effects rippling into eternity. Remember Psalm 127? Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it. Unless the Lord watches the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. Unless God's in it, what is it? Unless God gives your work, and I mean your work as a husband, as a wife, as a father, as a mother, as a son, as a businessman, as a, someone who serves in church, as a housewife, as a friend. I mean the whole gamut of your work. Unless God gives your work blessing, it'll end up in the dustbin of history. You know what Jesus said? He said, even a cup of cold water given in His name to one of the saints won't lose its eternal reward. What's done for Him and to Him and through Him is never wasted. As we've often said, only one life to live, soon past. Only what's done for Christ will last. And here's Moses' one last cry for grace. Come and invest what we do with your blessing. Let us do what we do for you. Let's do it with our might. Let's do it for your glory. Bless it with permanence. Perspective, presence, permanence. That's the answer to the riddle. Now the ultimate and final answer is resurrection. Dying, immediately going into the presence of God, and then when He raises our bodies, being forever with Him. But before that, Psalm 90 is the oldest and the best answer to the problem of time as our enemy. Ask God for perspective. Ask Him for His presence in salvation and then in sanctification. And then do what you do for Him, asking Him to bless you with permanence. And then you can really sing what we sang. O God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come, be Thou our God while troubles last and our eternal home. This is the answer to the riddle. Let's pray.